are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Ben Beacon. I'm the host of Locked On Wolves. Today's episode is brought to you by rockauto.com. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. Happy Monday, everybody. Today, we are going to focus on the defensive end of the floor for the Minnesota Timberwolves, which, of course, is exactly what the Timberwolves themselves will need to do when they finally hit the court again sometime this fall or winter, I guess, whenever those Elite Eight teams actually get to see the court in some sort of real competitive environment. There was an article written over at the Step Back, which is one of the sites at the Fansided Network, questioning, it was written about mid last week, questioning how the Wolves might be able to build a defense around Karl-Anthony Towns and D'Angelo Russell. I have some thoughts on that piece that I'd like to talk through. Obviously, there are plenty of question marks about that. It's really the biggest question mark surrounding the Wolves is, can you have two minus defenders be your two best players, and what do you need to do to have a competitive defense otherwise? So I want to spend some time on that. We've covered it in bits and pieces over the last several weeks here at Locked On Wolves, but I'd like to focus on this article, what it says specifically, what I agree with and what I don't. And that will be our main topic here today. First, before we get to that, a quick reminder to please subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Podcasts, wherever you listen to your podcast. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On T-Wolves. That's at Locked On T-Wolves. Don't forget the T. All right. The article in question is by Alec Liebsch. Liebsch, L-I-E-B-S-C-H. Apologize if I'm pronouncing that wrong. Alec Liebsch at the Step Back, again, middle of last week. Basically, the premise of the article is that the Timberwolves will struggle to build a defense around their two stars, Karl-Anthony Towns and D'Angelo Russell, both who are known to be below average defenders. And that's especially so, especially true of Russell. In this article, I believe that the analysis of both Towns and Russell individually is actually pretty spot on. And I'll read a paragraph here verbatim from the piece. Quote, Russell has been an outright negative at every stop in his career, speaking about his defense. This is in part because of a lack of effort, which can be fixed, but mostly because of athletic and skill limitations, which will be much tougher to improve upon. Towns is poor, again, defensively, for the opposite reason. He has the physical traits to be a plus defender at the five, both in space and at the rim, yet it's only translated to the NBA in glimpses. End quote. So that's all correct. It's hard to argue with that. We've talked at length on this podcast, and I've written about it at Dunking with Wolves, that D'Angelo Russell isn't super athletic. He just isn't a great defender. He's big. I mean, he's basically 6'5". He's got a solid wingspan, and he's a smart player, especially on the offensive end of the floor. But a combination of a lack of athleticism and a lack of consistent effort defensively, and a lack of accountability in terms of his effort on defense has led to him being a below average defender. And there's really no two ways about it. He just hasn't been a good defender by any metric you look at. In fact, for what it's worth, one of my favorite individual stats is ESPN's Real Plus Minus, which of course attempts to adjust an individual player's plus minus based on his teammates, who he's on the court with, his overall impact on the team's offensive performance and defensive performance. There's both offensive RPM and defensive RPM. There's a total RPM, and then it's measured in the points scored or points allowed per 100 possessions. And so for D'Angelo Russell, for some reason, he's listed on ESPN as a shooting guard in this metric, and he's 123rd out of 133 players listed as shooting guards in defensive real plus minus. Somewhat ironically, just one spot behind his friend, good friend, Devin Booker, who of course we spent a lot of time talking about at the end of last week on this podcast. Just one spot behind him, he's 122nd. If you look at overall RPM, to give you an idea of how good his offense is, he's 19th in overall RPM because his offensive RPM is a 3.42, which ranks him fifth among, again, these are shooting guards. So the only players he's behind in that statistic on offense are James Harden, Bradley Beal, Luka Doncic, and Devin Booker. Again, D'Angelo Russell is next, ahead of Lou Williams, JJ Redick, Paul George, Terrence Davis, of course, who's a shorter minute role player type guy, Drew Holiday, Buddy Hield, Eric Gordon. Clearly there's some noise to these numbers. And again, that's why not one metric can be taken as gospel, but it's never good when you're 123rd out of 133 in really anything. So that's just an example of one of the many metrics that would suggest Russell's not a good defender. The eye test would tell you the same thing. Of course, he's had flashes. He had that huge block of Jimmy Butler at the end of the victory over the Miami Heat just a couple of weeks before the NBA hiatus in early March. And that was a legitimately great play because, again, he's got good instincts on both ends of the floor. He's a smart player. He's a smart guy. And he's got the correct build to be able to play defense in the NBA. He has the ability to block shots because of his size. It's the ability to get steals because of his size, but he's not ultra athletic to cover for some of his other weaknesses or to cover for a lack of effort. So that's the issue with Russell. And the balance of this article really focuses on Karl-Anthony Towns more so than it does on D'Angelo Russell. So that's what I want to spend most of my time on is kind of dissecting what this article at the Step Back says about Karl-Anthony Towns, what it says about the Timberwolves defense and what they need to do to shore up said defense in order to cover for the deficiencies of Russell and Towns. Before we get any deeper in the article, though, I do want to talk about our title sponsor of today's podcast, our great friends at rockauto.com. With the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models, it is now impossible to stock all the parts you need in a traditional chain storefront. Why endure often pointless or seemingly intimidating questioning such as, is your Odyssey an LX or an EX? Which, by the way, actually happened to me literally just a few weeks ago. Yes, I own a Honda Odyssey. And yes, there was a question about whether it was an LX or an EX. And I had to do a bit of research to be 100% confident in which model I had. Once you do that, you have to wait for the person at the counter to order the parts on their computer. They'll choose the only brand that their warehouse happens to carry. You have a computer with access to rockauto.com, both at home and in your pocket. Chain stores have different price tiers for professional mechanics and do-it-yourselfers, while rockauto.com's prices are the same for everybody and are reliably low. Rockauto.com always offers the lowest prices possible rather than changing prices based on what the market will bear, like airlines do. Also, rockauto.com is for everybody. It does not require membership or account login. It's a family business serving auto parts customers for 20 years. Go to rockauto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. The catalog is unique and remarkably easy to navigate. Quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle and choose the brands, specifications, and prices that you prefer. Best of all, prices at rockauto.com are always reliably low and the same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers. Why spend up to twice as much for the exact same parts? Go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Right, Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. RockAuto.com. Okay, now that we've talked a little bit about D'Angelo Russell, let's get into the Karl-Anthony Towns piece of the article, which again is really the meat of the issue here. So there's a statement in this article at the Step Back. Again, this is an article titled How Do the Timberwolves Build a Defense Around Their Stars by Alec Leibsch at the Step Back. There's a statement in the article that goes as such. And here's the direct quote. First and foremost, Towns' defense must improve for the Timberwolves to get anywhere. No team makes it deep into the playoffs without at least an average rim protector, something Towns is far from at the moment. A good chunk of his mishaps can be attributed to bad teammates, but at some point he becomes a common denominator with poor defensive units. End the direct quote. So a couple things. First of all, yeah, the Towns defense must improve for the Timberwolves to get anywhere. That is kind of a no-brainer. At the same time, he follows it up with the statement that no team makes it deep into the playoffs without at least an average rim protector. I challenge that premise a little bit. I mean, there's a lot of qualifiers there, I guess, except for the no team part, but making it deep into the playoffs with something like at least an average rim protector. I mean, I just went back and looked at the last few teams that made it to the conference finals or further. And I mean, you're talking about teams that for the most part, yeah. I mean, obviously the Raptors had Serge Ibaka. I mean, there's some good examples, but like the Golden State Warriors last year that went to the finals, they didn't really have a rim protector that played consistent minutes. DeMarcus Cousins, a little bit. I don't know that he's across the board considered a rim protector. You had some Jordan Bell minutes, but not a consistent guy. The Portland Trailblazers last year went to the conference finals. They got swept there, but they got there. They didn't have one. They didn't have a rim protector. Yusuf Nurkic, of course, was hurt and had been on the team for much of the year, but he's not even like your prototypical rim protecting center. The Boston Celtics last year, of course, they had Tice in short minutes. And of course, he's played more this year and played even better. But he was playing, you know, 12, 14 minutes a game last year in the playoffs. And he's the only guy on the team that had anything really significantly above an average block rate. the Cavs a couple of years ago didn't have a rim protector. Larry Nance Jr. would have been the closest thing. And again, kind of a fringe rotation guy. So there's plenty of examples of teams that had defensive schemes that worked for whatever reason. Now, obviously the Cavs had LeBron James, who's a phenomenal defender. And you could say the same thing about, you know, the Celtics having, you know, Jaylen Brown and some other guys who are good defenders. But the point being is it's not 100% necessary to have an above average rim defender playing significant minutes to get deep into the playoffs. Karl Anthony Towns is already a better rim protector than any of the guys that all those teams I just mentioned that made the finals over the past couple of years or the conference finals. He's already a better rim protector than any of them. And that's not the primary issue. In fact, so Karl Anthony Towns' block rate did go down last year. That matters. However, I guess the full context is it went down to 2.9% after 4.2 the previous year. That tied his lowest mark of his career, which was the second season back when he was 21 years old in the 16-17 season. So the block rate goes down. Part of that has to do with scheme and how the Wolves chose to defend, especially the pick and roll last year. Towns was doing a lot more dropping and he dropped too far in a lot of cases, and the Wolves got burned by guys making wide open mid-range jumpers or Towns being in no man's land and crafty guards on other teams, crafty ball handlers, finding open players in the paint or shooters on the perimeter. And that was an issue. But on the flip side of that 2.9 block rate, Karl Anthony Towns was actually one of the league's better interior defenders by opponent defensive field goal percentage. And again, there is some noise here and none of these stats should be taken in a vacuum. I think it's important to look at all of them to kind of build a picture of how good of a rim protector a guy is or isn't. So defensive field goal percentage from within 6 feet, the very best in the league last year, or this season, I should say, the 1920 season, the two best have actually, extremely ironically, the exact same defensive field goal percentage, and their brothers, Brooke and Robin Lopez, both allowed just 44.1% for opponents within 6 feet of the rim. Those are the best two marks in the league. Right after them, Ivaka Zubats of the Clippers. You have Rudy Gobert is fifth in the league. Alex Len, Jakob Poeltl on here, JaVale McGee, Hassan Whiteside, guys that you'd expect, John Henson in limited games, Anthony Davis. Karl Anthony Towns is not far down this list. In fact, he's right next to Jarrett Allen, who's thought of as a really good defender and is a really good defender for the Brooklyn Nets. On this particular list, Towns sits 21st, which isn't bad. Again, just 0.3 percentage points behind Jarrett Allen, Towns allowed 51.2% shooting to opponents within 6 feet of the rim. That's not bad. Just ahead of Willie Cauley-Stein, Bismack Biyombo, Jan Mahimi, Steven Adams, Nerlens Noel, Jonas Valanciunas, guys who have a better defensive reputation than Karl Anthony Towns. Again, one metric, it's not something that determines whether or not he is a good defender. However, that flies in the face of the narrative of him being a poor rim defender. Coupled with that, if you look at Basketball Reference and Karl Anthony Towns' page on basketballreference.com, his defensive box plus minus has actually gone up every year of his career, or I should say over the last four seasons, from a career low, negative 0.7 in 16-17, it's gone up incrementally each year and was a positive 0.8 this year. Again, not good. And that number especially has quite a bit of noise to it because his teammates will impact that number quite a bit. But that number has moved in the right direction over the past four seasons, and that matters. Another number that doesn't look great is the ESPN real plus minus number that we talked about related to D'Angelo Russell. Towns is actually the number one center in the entire league in offensive real plus minus. He's the very last center in defensive real plus minus. It's not close in either direction. His offensive, just for the sake of trying to build some additional context here, for offensive real plus minus, Karl Anthony Towns is a 5.34. The next best number is Nikola Jokic at 2.55. That gap is massive. The only other player over a one is Joel Embiid. And then it drops down to a bunch of guys below a one. And there's only 13 guys that have positive offensive real plus minus numbers. You look at the defensive real plus minus, and the best centers are Rudy Gobert, number one, Daniel Tice, who we already talked about with the Celtics, Ivaka Zubats, number three, Brooke Lopez, number four, a bunch of names that you would expect near the top. Karl Anthony Towns is dead last, minus 3.33. And again, not close. The next worst is Jackson Hayes, the rookie from the Pelicans, was a negative 2.44. So about 0.9 or so better than Towns. Towns is the worst. So he's the best in one category, he's the worst in the other. And what does that lead to? His overall real plus minus, in case you're curious, that makes him ninth behind Jokic, Gobert, Embiid, Tice, Zubats, Lopez, Favors, Vucevic. Again, there's plenty of noise in all these things. He's not, you know, Daniel Tice is not a better player than Karl-Anthony Towns because ESPN's real plus minus says so. All these numbers have to be taken as a part, not the whole by themselves. I mean, you look at the plus minus numbers suggest Towns is by far the best offensive center, by far the worst defensive center. You look at the box plus minus, which is okay, but is improving every year at Basketball Reference. You look at the rim protection percentage, and Towns is an above average center in that regard, but his block rate's down. So all I'm trying to say is all these numbers you can build a narrative in any of these directions, and to suggest that Towns is a terrible rim protector or, you know, has been a significantly below average center defensively is not accurate. Is he where he needs to be? No. And he's not close. And there were some areas that he regressed this year. The block rate shouldn't be 2.9. It should still be higher regardless of the scheme. Towns is too talented and the Wolves rely on him too much, especially when he's the only big on the floor and he's playing with three wings and a point guard. He's got to block more shots. He's got to affect the game in that way. There's no denying that. But I think it's important to note that some of these different numbers and metrics can pull in different directions, and you have to look at all those numbers as well as watch him on the court and see what he's doing. You could tell last year he was still tentative in the scheme. He was afraid to get burned. He was a step late on rotations trying to block shots. He sagged too deep in pick and rolls, being worried about guys blowing by him and would give up wide open shots, you know, from beyond 6 feet. And yes, the Wolves defense is designed to give up mid-range shots, but too often the Wolves left them as completely wide open. You'll remember D'Angelo Russell scoring, it might've been 50, it was 40 something against the Timberwolves when he was with the Warriors earlier in the year. And that was because the Wolves just let him have wide open 14 footers. And that's not the plan. That's not what David Vanterpool, the associate head coach and defensive coordinator, wants to see. And that had to do with Towns being new to the scheme and also being a little bit, again, afraid to be burned. And the Wolves are going to need to fix that. Getting back to the article, I want to hit one more thing, and then I want to kind of close by talking about what the proposed solution in this article is for the Timberwolves. One note that's made here that I think is interesting is that Robert Covington and Towns together had a net rating of plus 2.9, and having a defensive-minded partner at the four has helped Towns quite a bit, having somebody that can provide that support. Of course, Covington isn't a true four. He's a modern four, and of course, is even playing the five now in Houston. But Towns also played next to Taj Gibson, and the Wolves defense wasn't much better. And in fact, Towns' individual numbers weren't any better at all, despite the fact that Gibson was he was more of a traditional power forward, a little bit undersized, but a very good defender. So who is the perfect defensive partner at the four for the Timberwolves? What is their plan moving forward? I want to look at what this article suggests as a solution and why I don't necessarily agree with that as what the Wolves will end up doing. So we're going to hit on that next. One of the things we've touched on a bit over the past couple of months here at Locked On Wolves is the Timberwolves' potential solution at the four moving forward. We've talked a lot about what the Wolves have done in recent years, what they've tried next to Karl-Anthony Towns. Of course, early on in his career, he played with Gorgui Dieng. That wasn't necessarily a great fit offensively. It worked in stretches, but it wasn't sustainable long-term. Taj Gibson, the Wolves saw the most team success with Gibson next to Towns, and Gibson had the best offensive year of his career, in part because having Towns on the court with him allowed him more space to operate, and the Wolves would actually give Gibson a few possessions a game in the post. He'd hit some mid-range jumpers. He was a good offensive rebounder. And then the Wolves tried Dario Saric. That didn't work, partly because of Saric's lack of aggressiveness, and I also think he was frustrated with not getting the ball more often, and then when he got it, he wasn't exactly trying everything he could do to put the ball in the basket. He seemed very tentative at times, and that wasn't a fit. And Gerson Rosas moved on from him, started this year with Robert Covington at the four, and it worked. You know, the Wolves started 11-9 offensively. It was awesome. Defensively, it was okay. Again, Covington was by the numbers the best defensive partner for Towns, but the Wolves had challenges rebounding the ball, especially at the trade deadline. The Timberwolves acquired Juancho Hernan Gomez from Denver, and he only got to play two games with Towns before Towns got injured, and the Wolves won one of those games. That blowout went over the Clippers. They lost at Toronto. That was the only game that Russell and Towns played together. But the early returns were that offensively, this would be awesome too. Hernan Gomez is a lower usage guy. He can knock down open threes. He's also not a bad cutter. and can cut to the rim and get passes from Towns. He's a decent passer. He doesn't need the ball in his hands very much offensively, and he's a solid defender. And he's more of a traditional four, obviously a modern stretch four, but traditional in terms of his size. He's not going to go out and guard twos. He can switch onto threes in a pinch, but not ideally. And is that the ideal scenario? Is that the ideal partner for Towns? Or are the Wolves looking to play essentially three wings and have Jake Layman at the four, or maybe even play like a Jarrett Culver at the four if he adds a little bit of weight? Or, you know, James Johnson, I guess, is another guy acquired at the deadline who's somewhere in between Layman and Hernan Gomez in terms of size. Who is the ideal partner for Karl-Anthony Towns in the front court? And the supposed or the suggested solution here at the step back is potentially drafting Onyeka Okongwu, who we've talked about a little bit here in this space. And there's a faction of Timberwolves fans that's clamoring for Okongwu to be the Timberwolves draft pick, pretty much based on the fact that he's the best interior defender, certainly in the class, one of the better defenders all around. And there's actually a ton of similarities between Okongwu and Taj Gibson. And so if on paper and if defense is your number one concern, you can certainly make this argument. And I really like Okongwu as a prospect. I don't think the Timberwolves are going to draft Okongwu because I don't think Gerson Rosas wants to play a guy who can't stretch the floor out to the three-point line, much less a rookie who can't stretch the floor out to the three-point line and plug him in next to Towns while he tries to make the playoffs. I don't see that happening. If you can get great value, if you can trade back and get him and pick up another pick or whatever, I think that it could work. But I also don't think Gerson Rosas wants to do that. I think he wants to play a guy like Hernan Gomez, who's switchable, who isn't a rim protector at all, but can guard a couple different positions on the perimeter and offensively is a perfect fit next to Karl-Anthony Towns. Okongwu would basically be Taj Gibson in that he could stretch the floor to the mid-range, hopefully. He could offensive rebound. He would score a little bit in the paint, but you'd have some spacing issues on offense. Remember, the Timberwolves are going to want Towns to handle the ball more often. And Okongwu, where are you going to put him on the floor if you're trying to play five out or four out with Towns? You don't want to draft a guy in the top six and plug him as your backup center behind Towns. The Wolves like Naz Reid, and Naz Reid can stretch the floor. The Wolves like James Johnson. He can stretch the floor, and he's a good defender. I don't see the Timberwolves taking Okongwu. I'm not saying he's a bad prospect, and I'm not saying it wouldn't work. The Wolves made the playoffs with Taj Gibson at the four. It could work. I just don't think, for better or for worse, this is what Gerson Rosas and Ryan Saunders want to do. That's the suggested solution here. There's a couple of other guys who would have to be traded for. Mentioned Aaron Gordon is a guy who's cropped up quite a bit, actually, right before the trade deadline last year as a potential target from the Magic. Jeremy Grant, who's a restricted free, he's got a player option with the Nuggets. He could be available, although I'd be surprised if the Nuggets made another trade with the Wolves and gave them Jeremy Grant for anything, really. But that's a possibility, and Grant would actually be a really great fit as well. I think defensively, even a better fit than Aaron Gordon. So there are other possibilities. I actually think of all those, Hernan Gomez might be the best fit, as long as the Wolves are confident that they can fill in those other two wing positions with solid defenders. Can Malik Beasley become a solid defender? That's a huge question mark, and that's also addressed in this article. Jarrett Culver's already a decent defender. Josh Okogie's a really good one, but you can't really play both of those guys together because then you've got two non-shooters on the floor, and if the Wolves are going to play five out, that's not feasible. So really, all that to say, this article identifies an obvious problem, the defense. It identifies Russell as an issue, but Towns as the bigger issue just because he's got a higher ceiling and he plays a more pivotal defensive position. Especially in the scheme the Wolves are trying to play in today's NBA, the Wolves can cover for Russell's deficiencies a little more on the perimeter than they can for Towns, because Towns has to not only protect the rim, but he's got to be switchable. He's got to be able to funnel guys to the right spot on the floor. He has to be able to contest mid-range jumpers to some extent and still get back and rebound. Towns is being asked to do a ton. He is. And the biggest question is, what is the most synergistic fit at the four on the defensive side of the floor? I think we've found a couple of fits offensively. Okongwu would be a good fit on defense, not on offense. Taj Gibson was a good fit on defense. Wasn't quite ideal on offense, although it worked to some extent. Dario Saric wasn't a fit on either end of the floor. Gorgui Dieng isn't going to, you know, that type of a player isn't a fit in 2020, 2021. And now we have Juancho Hernan Gomez, who is a fit offensively and could be a fit defensively. And it's really a shame that we didn't get to see the two of them play together for more than two games. But at any rate, that's the next thing that the Timberwolves have to solve. And while I don't necessarily agree with the conclusion of this article, and I would argue that Towns is a better defender than the real plus minus numbers, for instance, would show, or even as mentioned in this article, there's no denying that the defense needs to be fixed. And Towns is a huge part of that. Russell's part of it. Whatever the Wolves choose to do with the other three spots on the floor is a huge part of it as well. Are they going to go for pure offensive upside with a Malik Beasley and Hernan Gomez? Are they going to look for a more solid approach, or are they going to try and find a couple of defenders who maybe aren't as dynamic offensively, like in a Kongwu, just to try and shore up that end of the floor? I tend to think that's not the approach that they take, but time will tell. And I think the draft will give us a really good clue as to which direction Gerson Rosas is headed. All right, that's all we have for you today. Thanks once again for listening to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Remember, the Locked On Network is your local experts on the biggest stories. Subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google, wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On T-Wolves. That's at Locked On T-Wolves. Don't forget the T. Today's episode, again, was brought to you by rockauto.com. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. Once again, I'm Ben Beacon. This is the Locked On Wolves podcast, and we'll catch you next time.